One of my favorite guests, Bobby McMahon, soccer writer for Forbes magazine, joins us here on Sportsnet tonight. Hey, Bobby, how are you?
I am great. How are you, George?
We're terrific here, Bobby. The Prem is on the go. It's full after that incredible World Cup in Russia. Some already interesting storylines of the Premier League, and none other than the biggest club in the world, arguably, Man United struggling to an 0-2 start. What's been the most surprising thing for you in Man United's early season struggles?
Perhaps it's just been the same as we kind of saw last year. And perhaps we should have expected that. They got off to the decent start. They didn't play well against Leicester City, but they did get the win. And then the display against Brighton was kind of very, very emblematic of the kind of performances. Even though they finished second last year, they were so far behind Manchester City, and they did have these very uninspiring displays. Manchester United fans have been brought up on attacking football, creative football, going for it, and that just wasn't there last year. Mourinho, I think psychologically, has not done the team an awful lot of good in terms of his whining about not getting players. But by the same token, Manchester United and the board of directors pretty much knew what they were getting when they signed Mourinho, so I don't think they should be surprised at that either.
Bobby, forgive me if I get a little giddy because I'm a Liverpool fan and this just brings so much joy to me to watch this happen. But, you know, Gary Neville says that he spoke with some people on the staff or somebody with the team, and he said that there's nothing wrong. The locker room is great and it was just a bad performance. But I don't know, from the outside looking in, this looks a heck of a lot like Mourinho has lost the room, and we've seen this before. Players, they're siding with Paul Pogba a little bit more than they're siding with Jose Mourinho.
Well, you look at it, isn't it? There's a part, and I know everybody, you know, the common approach to this is, you know, Mourinho goes after the third year, but it's his style. He brings a confrontational style, not just to players, but to the media, internally to the organisation. And you saw it, you wonder if it really must wear thin on the players after a while. It certainly wore thin on Chelsea the last time. The first time, perhaps he had a different group of players when he was with Chelsea between 2004 and 2007 that kind of stuck by him a little bit longer, but still the performances sort of faded a little bit. And it's this kind of incessant drive and the pressure he puts the players under in a way that perhaps doesn't bring the best out in some of the players that really is a detriment. And so he's a short-term fix. The other thing, and I think this is really important, and it's in, you know, the Liverpool thing with Jürgen, with Klopp, and then you've got Pep Guardiola at Manchester City. You look at that and you look at Manchester City's two biggest rivals as far as the Premier League is concerned, and both teams are playing attractive football, inventive football, football that gets the fans excited. So it's not just the fact that Mourinho's given us the usual kind of Mourinho style. When you compare it to Liverpool at the moment and you compare it to Manchester City, it just looks so stale and unappetizing and boring. So that contrast really doesn't do Mourinho any good either. It'd be different if he was sitting, if last year they'd won the league, maybe hadn't played particularly well, but they'd won the league nonetheless, then I think a lot of fans would go, oh, well, it's not great soccer, it's not great football to watch, but at least we're winning trophies. But last year he didn't win trophies either, and I think that's really playing into this this sense of what happens next, because I don't think anybody's seeing this as turned out in a very positive way.
Bobby, I know that Pogba was at one point the most expensive player in the world, and I watched him be the boss of the midfield for France winning the World Cup. Where is that guy been for Man United? Is it his positioning? Is it the tactics for Mourinho? Why can't that guy translate that play I saw for France playing for the Red Devils?
Well, he's done it now and again, but he hasn't done it nearly as consistently since he returned to Manchester United as he should have done for the money that was paid for him. Juventus used him in a very particular way in that kind of midfield three, pushing down that kind of left-hand side. France in the World Cup, I think, used him in a quite different way, and I think this is a real bit of an eye-opener. for a lot of people in terms of the incredible, I would say, the tactical and positional discipline that Pogba played, that we got from Pogba in the World Cup was really something that's quite outstanding. You look at, and this is probably, if you cut to the chase on Mourinho, this is probably my biggest complaint about Jose Mourinho. You can look at that Manchester United team, and I think this is part of the problem with Pogba at the moment, and it has been for the last couple of years, is I don't think anybody can tell you what that best Manchester United 11 is. You look at Liverpool, you look at Manchester City, and give or take maybe one player, maybe two, just about everybody would agree on the best starting 11. I don't think you can do that with Manchester United. There's chopping and changing. He seems unsure of what his best 11 is. He's bought players. He's spent a lot of money, as he's done at other clubs as well. And he's not happy with them. And it's just this continual churn of players. And I just wonder if Pogba had perhaps had a more consistent midfield to play with, like he did with France in the World Cup, whether we'd see better overall performances from him on a more consistent basis.
You mentioned Liverpool, and this, like I said, I'm so happy to have you on to talk about this. But what I wasn't really happy with was the performances in the first two games, really, from Liverpool. Like, you know, they won 4-0 against West Ham, and they beat, oh my goodness, I'm blanking on
Crystal,
who they...
Crystal Palace.
Now, they weren't overly impressive in the first two games, despite having a 6-goal differential and 2 clean sheets, but they got it done. What did you like or not like about their game the first two matches?
I think that's actually the thing that should be encouraging Liverpool fans, is the fact they didn't play particularly well, and they came away with two pretty substantial wins. Because if you look at Liverpool, the last couple of years, they haven't had problems beating the bad teams, or the good teams, I should say. They've actually got a really good record against the top teams. You just look at the performance against Manchester City last year, for example. And that's pretty prevalent through the years of Klopp, the three seasons or so we've had of Klopp, is he has not had problems beating and competing with the top teams. But he has had, and this is where Liverpool have fallen away in previous seasons, is they've struggled at times. Sometimes it hasn't been losses, sometimes it's just been draws. But they've dropped stupid points against lower-level teams. And the way you look at this starting off, West Ham certainly haven't got any points so far. Crystal Palace, I think, was a more substantial test of the calibre of Liverpool this year. But I think and I kind of believe that Klopp is going to get more consistency out of that Liverpool squad in the kind of more mundane games. It's not about getting up for Manchester City. It's not getting up for Tottenham or Chelsea games. It's about doing the job when you're playing these low-level teams, the mid-table teams, and coming away with 3 points each time. So I think if I was a Liverpool fan, I think I'd be really encouraged by the first two sets of results.
I totally agree with you. That Crystal Palace game, even last year, they would have dropped points for sure. But the one thing that I've come to really appreciate is that every penny that they spent on Virgil van Dijk and Alisson have been worth it. I think that Virgil van Dijk is the best center back in the Premier League.
I did a column for Forbes the first season that Van Dijk went to Southampton. And I suggested at that time, and I got notes from people actually claiming I was probably insane. I suggested that Van Dijk, the next time he moved, was going to be probably the most expensive defender in Europe. As it turned out, he became the most expensive player in the world. But I watched Van Dijk when he was with Celtic, and you could see the class. You could see, he makes mistakes now and again, but he's big, he's strong, he has such a delicate touch. He has such a great range of passing, and he just is one of these players that is just so suited to the modern game in terms of not panicking in the back and playing out. As I say, he'll make mistakes, all defenders do, but pound for pound, Van Dijk, ever since the first time I saw him with Celtic, I thought, this guy has got it. And then he took to Southampton so quickly. There was going to be problems with a faster game in England, perhaps a little bit more physical, certainly better quality players. But Van Dijk really took to that Premier League really, really quite easily. And so, yeah, I think you're seeing it now in a really good team that they maybe paid a premium for it, but it was well worth the premium.